Well, good morning, friends and brethren. Very good to see you today. We have some back with us who have been away, been sick. Sure good to see you.
Glad we're all able to be together on this Lord's Day. There are some real confusing ideas and attitudes with regard to what is appropriate attire. I mean, if you just ask people in general what is modest and what is not, it's kind of amazing, you know, what some people will say. And just how different some people think about things such as that. I mean, when you walk through a department store and you look at clothes hanging on the rack, it's pretty obvious that there's some real differences of attitude as to what is modest and what is not. And particularly this time of year, if you're looking to buy clothes, it's just nearly impossible to find something that I think the Lord would call modest. Because it just seems that this time of year, when you walk through the store, most of what's hanging on the rack does not include just a whole lot of material. For man, it seems the trends of fashion is set by those great fashion designers that come out of Paris and London and New York. Every once in a while you see on the news, you know, there'll be some news story about some show that has taken place in one of these cities, and all the latest designs are being displayed there. And very often the way that it is described to us that these new designs are exciting, they're provocative, they are tantalizing and sexy. This is the way that it's presented. And so if you want to kind of be, you know, in the right crowd or in the in crowd, well, you want to look this way. And it seems that all fashion is to some degree, you know, kind of carried away with some of these thoughts. But, you know, clothing like this is designed with the intent of attracting attention. That's why clothing is designed like that, to be tantalizing and exciting and such. Isn't it amazing that we've allowed fashion designers to determine what is modest or not? I mean, there are trends. We follow trends. We are a people that is just that way. We do. We follow trends and we get caught up in those things. And it's not a surprise to us that many just have little or perhaps no regard at all for God's standards of modesty. And I would suggest to you that God's standards of modesty are very different than that which walks down the aisle where the fashion designers are displaying what they have created. Modesty is a very much needed Bible study. It's something we need to think about because it really does make a difference what we choose to wear. Modesty is a needed Bible study because the Bible addresses the subject. God gives us some answers. God gives us some insight on what He considers to be modest or what is not. And so this makes modesty something we should all be concerned about. This makes modesty something that we need to be thinking about. This makes modesty something that parents need to be talking to their children about. The lesson really today is a lesson about attitude. The Bible fully deals with how we should dress ourselves basically through biblical principle in an attitude that is a Godward or a godly attitude. The world is not going to accept that. I'll just tell you, the world will not accept what the Bible says about modesty. But if we are to be the people of God, we have to. Our convictions on dress will be challenged and may cause us to forget, you know, that God has called us. That's right. Our convictions will be challenged. And if we're not careful, we will forget that God has called us to a different standard. God has called us to holy living. Look at a couple of passages here with me. 2 Corinthians chapter 7, we're going to. I'd like you to turn with me. 2 Corinthians chapter 7, and the very first verse there, where the apostle pens, "Therefore, having these promises, beloved, let us cleanse ourselves from all filthiness of the flesh and spirit, perfecting holiness in the fear of God." There's quite a contrast depicted to us right there in just one verse, that we would be the people that is putting off filthiness and we're putting on holiness. The two cannot be together. The two cannot be housed together. It doesn't fit. You know, that we are the ones perfecting holiness in the fear of God. Here's our motivation. We know what God wants and expects of us in these things. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, we read at verse 7. Very simply, the text says, "For God did not call us to uncleanness, but holiness." There again, the stark contrast. One pitted against another. Filthiness or uncleanness and the idea of holiness. Very different ideas, very different concepts. Peter penned in 1 Peter chapter 1, it was God who said it, you know, "Be holy as I am holy." That's the call that goes out to us. God is calling us to holiness, and that's going to determine so much about who we are and what we do, where we go, and even what we wear. It makes a difference. God would say so. The Apostle Paul would say, "Walk worthy of the calling with which you were called." Those who are Christians, we have to keep in mind, we have to remember that we are the people of God. And it makes a difference how we walk. God is looking at that. And when it comes to our dress, we cannot allow man to set the standard of what is or what is not modest. God has already given us principles on that. And so it's fair to ask then, really, what is our attitude toward modesty? What is our attitude toward modesty? Look with me in Genesis chapter 9. We go to Genesis chapter 9. You remember the story here about Noah. Noah was a great man of God. He was one of the early patriarchs of God. And Noah did some things that so many others were unwilling to do, to be faithful to God when seemingly the world was against God. And yet we find Noah is not one who was without fault or without weakness or sin. It was well after the flood. Noah had planted a vineyard. And from that vineyard there was wine that was made, and Noah is drunk. Well, at least there's a lesson here, if nothing else, about the foolishness of strong drink and what he can cause us to do. Because we find here Noah was drunk with wine, and as he slept he was uncovered, the text says. But what we're really looking at here is the attitude of his sons and how they responded with him. Okay, we're looking here at Genesis chapter 9, verse 18 beginning. The sons of Noah who came out of the ark were Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Ham was the father of Canaan. These were the three sons of Noah, and from them came the people who were scattered over all the earth. Noah, a man of the soil, proceeded to plant a vineyard, and when he drank some of its wine, he became drunk and lay uncovered in his tent. Ham, the father of Canaan, saw his father's nakedness and told his two brothers outside. But Shem and Japheth took a garment and laid it across their shoulders, and they walked in backward and covered their father's nakedness. Their faces were turned the other way so they would not see their father's nakedness. When he slept, he became unnaked. Some have questioned, to what extent was the nature of his nakedness? Well, I don't know. Naked to me means you have no clothes on. But you know what? There's a biblical side that seems to illustrate to us that nakedness may not mean totally unclothed, but that's another point for another time. But what we understand here is he was undressed enough to where it should have been a concern. Even offensive. And we see a very different, contrasting attitude here about nakedness and modesty in his sons, just in the way that they responded and reacted to this. Ham saw his father's nakedness, and what he did is he went and told the other two brothers about it. There was a certain irreverence toward modesty or his father's nakedness. Seemingly no shame here about it, nothing indicated. He wasn't embarrassed. We can't see that in the text in any way. And this becomes Ham's sin. Shem and Japheth, well, they responded differently. They respected their father, even in his nakedness, and had a sense of their own shame. They didn't want to see their father's nakedness. They found no delight in it, and they sought to prevent it. Even the way they approached their father, they knew he needed to be covered up. And yet they didn't want to see their father's nakedness and took a cloth between them and walked in backwards so they couldn't see him and covered up their father's nakedness. They were ashamed of what was taking place. And yet we know we live in a time where there are so many who find no shame in nakedness at all, in their own or in anyone else's. There is a relationship between who we are and what we wear. We're still in the book of Genesis, looking here at the third chapter. It's Adam and Eve. You remember the story. Adam and Eve are in the garden. They've been told they can eat of anything in the garden except the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. God's instruction to them was so very, very simple and very plain, and yet we know they sinned. And there were consequences because of that. And with this new knowledge was the ability to even realize here they were naked. In Genesis chapter 3, verse 7, we take up reading where the text would say, "Then the eyes of both of them were opened, and they realized that they were naked. So they sewed fig leaves together and made coverings for themselves. Then the man and his wife heard the sound of the Lord God as he was walking in the garden in the cool of the day, and they hid from the Lord God among the trees in the garden. But the Lord called to the man and said, 'Where are you?' And he answered, 'I heard you in the garden. I was afraid because I was naked, so I hid.' And he said, 'Who told you that you were naked? Have you eaten from the tree that I have commanded you not to eat from?'" Well, their nakedness was exposed in more than one ways. Their nakedness, if we just use it in that way, as far as their sin. God knew about their sin. There is no hiding sin from God. But our focus here is just more in their dress. When they became aware of the fact that they were naked, they attempted to cover themselves. They made fashioned fig leaves or some type of covering. Whatever the covering was, though, it was not sufficient. God, when God came to them and saw them, he could see that they were not covered properly. And so, verse 21 goes on to say, that the Lord God made garments of skin for Adam and his wife and clothed them. Whatever it was that they thought was a covering for them was not sufficient. And in fact, even there must have been some conscience about them from the standpoint that they were hiding from God and trying to cover their nakedness, even though at this point they had already covered themselves somewhat with what they had fashioned. But more importantly even is the fact that when God made something for them, it says that he clothed them. In some way they were covered up more properly. We can see then, sometimes there's a real difference in attitude with regard to nakedness and what it is and how one should respond to nakedness. Very different ideas. We see that in our society. I would like to think that we are a people that has a different attitude about nakedness or how we should be clothed as compared to the world. It's just as we said a while ago, you go to a department store, and I've heard Sandra say it time and again, there's nothing fit to buy here. I can't find clothes. Sometimes she makes clothes. That's what you have to do sometimes to be able to have something that will cover you well. But now, what some people will say, and I've heard this time and again, from brethren even, well, it's not just a matter of what you wear, but it's what is in your heart that counts. Well, I agree that it's what is in your heart that counts, but what's in our heart? And here's where we have to think and focus some. I read an article somewhere along the way that I thought illustrated very well that it makes a difference about what you wear. I want to read this to you, if you just bear with me on this. Listen carefully. Suppose you're walking down the street and a woman passes by wearing very tight pants or a very short skirt, and a tight, form-fitting top. We don't even have to use our imagination a great deal to envision that. And as she walks by, she has a cigarette hanging from her mouth, and her hair is fixed in just an extraordinary way, and even the way she is wearing her makeup causes one to look twice. And when she walked by, she had a certain look in her eyes as she gazed at you, and there was a real hitch in her get-along, if you know what I mean, that would cause waves as she walked by. You could not help but reflect on what you had witnessed. But as you turn the corner, there's another woman walking toward you, and you observe that she is very neatly dressed. Her dress is fashionable, but not too short. Her hair is fixed nice and arranged well, and she has a normal walk. No false eyelashes or globs of makeup or anything that causes undue attention. Just nice and beautiful. Can we see a difference there? Sometimes there are those who say, it makes no difference really what you wear. Really? Can we see a difference? And men, if you were picking a partner for life, of those two described, which would you choose? Or if you had to say which one of these women were a Christian, which one might you choose? I think that little story helps to illustrate a Bible principle. Look with me to Proverbs chapter 7. Let's go to Proverbs chapter 7. King Solomon is writing to his son, trying to give some instruction of life and warnings of life, some things that he needs to be so careful about, some things that he needs to be aware of. Here is where he needs some wisdom to understand that there are some in this life that have evil intent and will do evil things. Don't be fooled is what the wise man is trying to say to his son. The young man is being warned of the danger of being subdued by a crafty woman, one with flattering lips who has just the right things to say to entice and to draw you in. Proverbs chapter 7, verse 1. My son, keep my words and store up my commandments within you. Keep my commandments and you will live. Guard my teaching as the apple of your eye. Bind them on your fingers and write them on the tablet of your heart. Say to wisdom, you are my sister, and call understanding your kinsmen, and they will keep you from the adulteress, from the wayward wife with her seductive words. And so then he's going to go on to explain, here's some things you need to watch out for. He's already defined of whom he is speaking, a woman who has feet that are quick to run to other places, a woman who's married. This is a wife who is wayward, who has a way with words even. She's called an adulteress. We continue at verse 6. This is what the wise man sees. He sees, at the window of my house, I looked out and through the lattice, I saw the simple. I noticed among the young men a youth who lacked judgment. He was going down the street near her corner, walking along in the direction of her house at twilight as the day was fading, as the dark of night set in. Then out came a woman to meet him, dressed like a prostitute, with a crafty intent. What's being described to us, just the scene as it's unfolding, you can see what's happening. She was loud and defiant, and her feet never stayed at home. There's a lot that could be said about the attitude and the life of this woman, just about her morals and how deceptive she could be, and how sexually immoral she was. But here's the point I want us to pull out of this. That for her to accomplish the evil work that she was about, she had certain tools. I mean, she had feet that were wayward, that would take her to places that she shouldn't go. She had a mouth that she could say seductive things, appealing things to those who were looking for something. And she had a dress. She had a way of dressing herself that caused attention, that would make a man look twice, and that would draw him in. She had the dress of a harlot. She had the dress of a prostitute. And even by looking at her, a man might think, this might be an opportunity if that's what he's looking for. Because of the way that she dressed, it would be evident. This is something that would be obvious. The adulteress was advertising what she had to offer by what she was wearing. And yet there are those who say, you know, it doesn't really matter what you wear, it's what's in your heart. Now wait a minute. We already have some insight to the heart of this woman, and it's the heart of this woman that causes her to wear what she's wearing. We can't miss that point. And so when we say it doesn't really matter what you wear, I can't agree. I can't agree at all. It does matter what you wear. You remember the story in the Old Testament in Genesis about Judah, one of the sons of Jacob. In Genesis chapter 38, we find that, and we have perhaps seen before, Judah is a man who sometimes judgment is just not what it needs to be. And here he is, he sees a woman with whom he wants to have relationship with, a sexual relationship. He looks at a woman and he assumes that she is a harlot. Okay, we're in chapter 38, verse 14, beginning, where it says, actually, speaking of Tamar, it's his daughter-in-law. He doesn't know that because of the way she is dressed. And she is without a husband. Her husband has died. And she has been wearing certain clothes that would say something about her. It would say that she was in mourning. It would say that she was a widow. But it says in verse 14, she took off her widow's clothes, covered herself with a veil to disguise herself, and then sat down at the entrance to Enam, which is on the road to Timnah. For she saw that through Selah, though Selah had now grown up, she had not been given to him as a wife. This was what she was waiting for, to be a man to be given to her as a wife. Verse 15, when Judah saw her, he thought she was a prostitute, for she had covered her face. What was it that had drawn Judah into this woman? It was what she was wearing. What she was wearing was indicating something that he was looking for. It was her dress that was the issue here. Every now and again, back home, we had the Nashville news stations that came on. And on a fairly regular basis, I'll have to say, unfortunately, there would be some kind of a prostitution sting operation by the police in Nashville. Seems like it was always on Murfreesboro Road. Because Murfreesboro Road is, if you were looking for that kind of activity in action, that's where you went. And there'd always be some footage of, you know, the sting operation and of some ladies walking up and down the street there, offering what they had to offer. And it was interesting to me, and I made the comment even to Sandra, it's kind of like, you know, it's interesting to look at this. Every man driving by knows exactly what they have to offer, but not one of them is carrying a sign that says, I'm a prostitute. Not one of them is carrying a sign that says, you can buy sex right here. No signs. Never have seen not one sign of a woman advertising that. And yet they're advertising in every way. By what they're wearing. It was obvious. It was evident. They did not need to hold up signs to advertise what they offered, because it was obvious by what they were wearing. Let's understand in very simple terms. Certain clothes are worn to attract attention. And it's not hard for us to understand that dressing in a certain way is going to attract attention of a sexual nature. Immodest clothing does what immodest clothing is designed to do. It draws attention. You can't even argue against that point. No reasonable, rational person would try to argue against that point. It's logical, and we all understand that. Any of us of any maturity at all understands that if we wear immodest clothing, it will attract attention. That's what it does. And yet some say, even I've heard brethren say, it does not matter what you wear, it is the heart that counts. Really? Is that the best argument we could come up with to try to excuse wearing something that's immodest? Is that the best we can come up with? It doesn't even make sense. A pure heart with godly intentions does not want to attract attention in that way or cause one to lust after them. Dressing immodestly is going to prevent us sometimes. Let's listen to this now. Dressing modestly is going to prevent us from doing certain things we might have some interest to do because we wouldn't fit in. Dressing modestly is going to hold us back from being some places that we might first want to go, but we won't fit in dressed modestly. You ever try to walk the beach dressed with all your clothes on? when everybody else in the summertime doesn't have clothes on, doesn't that kind of stand out? Some places that we just don't fit. You know, I saw a very disappointing picture of a young woman, a Christian, a couple of years ago in our local paper. And it was disappointing because we had known this girl from the time she was a little girl, knew her parents. They were members of the church that we were at for a number of years, and they had moved on somewhere else. But anyway, this little girl was not a little girl. She was in college, and she was the star of the collegiate volleyball team, and they were in a tournament. And it had a picture of the girls out there playing, kind of focused in on her because she had won some awards and scholarships because of her abilities and all. That wasn't all disappointing. That wasn't disappointing at all. But what was disappointing was what she was wearing. In collegiate volleyball, which is something that's taken very seriously, you know, the girls wear shorts that are like short shorts. Like there's no legs to them at all. They're like short shorts. I know that the world dresses that way, but we don't. I mean, there's no excuse that we can make. There's no description that we can make to somehow make it sound or seem that that's modest dress or modest apparel. I mean, very short pants may be the norm on a collegiate volleyball team, but we're not trying to look like everyone else. It's not the norm to us. And so there are options in what we can wear. And if we can't be on the college volleyball team because we want to wear something more modest, if they forbid us from playing, well, okay. We'll just have to accept that. If you have to wear revealing clothes to be on the team, then please just don't be on the team. And if you have to dress immodestly to be a cheerleader, then please don't be a cheerleader. You know, the Olympics were just on here recently. I like watching the skiing because it's fast and there's a lot of action there, or the bobsledding. I love that kind of stuff. I think I'd like to do that, except I'm at the point where my bones rattle to think about it. But I think I would at least have loved to have done that. I'm amazed at the skill that's required to do the gymnastics and the figure skating. That's amazing. I don't particularly watch that. I'm sure you've noticed. They don't wear much in the way of clothes. And while I used to ice skate. When I ice skated when I was a kid, it was on a pond or on a frozen creek, and it was very cold outside. Immodesty was never an issue. Okay, we had a lot of clothes on. And so I have some appreciation of what it might take to be a figure skater. I've never had such grace as to be able to do that. But I don't need to watch that. I mean, you've noticed that even though the girls have some clothes on, not much, but the clothes are fashioned in such a way, well, it doesn't take a lot of imagination to know what's underneath, right? Do I need to draw a picture? I don't think so. Look, there's just some things that we can't do because for us to be modest in our appearance, we just can't have a part of that. We don't fit in. I mean, if you're going to go work out at the gym, Sandra and I do that. We go together. If you're going to work out at the gym, consider your dress and who might be watching you. Don't you tell me. Nobody watches you at the gym. Don't you tell me that. I know better than that. I mean, there are some gyms, in fact, that I don't go to because it's just a boy and a girl thing. It is. If you're involved in going to the gym, you know that. Some gyms aren't quite so bad that way. And then, you know, but how you dress makes a difference. And sometimes, what are you thinking about when you go to the gym? The dress of others can become a problem for you. And you have to be so careful about that. Sometimes you have to go to a different gym, or maybe not even to the gym at all, because sometimes you have to remove yourself from the source that is making you having troubles with what you are thinking. Guys are moved by visual stimuli. Yeah, that's the fancy way of thinking and saying that guys become excited by what they look at. I mean, we're not talking about anything that's just particularly new or some new discovery here. Judah looked at Tamar, and she was in the dress of a prostitute, and he knew what he wanted. Got the picture? Guys are moved and excited by what they see. And men can be attracted to women in such a way that would cause them to sin, or cause them to lust. Women, please be careful with what you wear. And be mindful of the battle that's going on in our minds. Be aware of that. Think about that. Because even among Christians, it's a problem. Short skirts and tight clothes and low shirts. I mean, we live in a day of cleavage. What else can you say? What is going on? And sometimes, even among Christians, it's a problem. I've heard men say, I don't even like serving the Lord's Supper because I don't know where to look. You understand? Women, we need to be careful not to be a problem for what men are thinking about. Don't make it harder on a man who's trying to keep his mind pure. Lust is an issue of life. Jesus dealt with it. Matthew chapter 5, would you go with me? Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5 at verse 27 here, we take up the reading where Jesus is already speaking, and he says, "You have heard that it was said to those of old, 'You shall not commit adultery.'" That's part of the old covenant, isn't it? Part of the Ten Commandments. Verse 28, Jesus says, "But I say to you that whoever looks at a woman to lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart." It's like we were talking a little while ago. Some say that, well, it doesn't matter what you wear, it's what's in your heart. Remember that part? See, our heart has a whole lot to do with just who we are. Whether we are the one doing the attracting or we're the one being attracted, we need to be careful to manage our heart. Well, to what extent would we go not to sin? Jesus uses a point here, an analogy that just seems bizarre and way out, but he's making a very strong point, verse 29, when he says, "And if your right eye causes you to sin, pluck it out and cast it from you. For it is more profitable for you than one of your if one of your members perish, than for your whole body to be cast into hell." Verse 30. "And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and cast it from you. For it is more profitable for you that one of your members perish than for your whole body to be cast in hell." We're talking about something serious. I mean, that part we can know and we can understand just so well. And listen, just because it's men who are addressed here in the passage, don't think for a moment that it's not an issue for women as well. Now, really, you know, women can lust too. Don't tell me that you don't. Don't even try to tell me, women. Don't try to tell me that you don't. I've noticed usually it's women who read those romance novels, and I'm assuming that you don't. From what I can understand, they're not worth reading. But you see them at the grocery store, they're on the stand, the checkout stand at the Walmart, you know. And I can't help but notice that on the front of those things, it's always going to be some beefy, buffed-up guy with no shirt on. Don't tell me lust is not an issue for women. It's what sells those little novels in that book rack right there. And so you have to be careful too. And so guys, what I'm saying is that we have to be careful in our appearance too. That we have to be covered up. That we don't need to be running down the street or on the basketball court with our shirt off. Because girls look at that just like guys look at such a thing. Parents, what are your children wearing? And we got some with small children here too, and you can easily think that, well, it's not an issue for us. Well, actually it is. Because what we start teaching and training our children when they're small and what we start buying them to wear when they're small leads into what they want to wear when they get older. It makes a difference. There are just some places that we need to avoid. Many think nothing about going to the public swimming pool or to the public beach that's full of people that are just nearly undressed. And I'm having a hard time seeing that that's where we belong. The beach is not the problem. And swimming is not the problem. It's how people are dressed that is the problem. And many are dressed in such a way that one cannot look and not have to reflect on what they have seen. Sometimes it's even Christians who are part of the crowd, and I don't understand. That just always troubles me. Christians who could not be identified as Christians by their dress. Those who just try to blend in with the crowd and wear whatever the crowd is wearing or not wearing. But we don't need to blend into the crowd. That's not who we are. We are not the people who are trying to blend into the crowd and act and dress like everyone else. We're trying to stand out. We are trying to be different. And what further amazes me is that some may be careful in what they wear at home, or at least among brethren, and yet go on vacation and seem to forget who they are. And there's two things that come to mind. I know that there are those sometimes who go on vacation and forget on the Lord's Day that it's the Lord's Day and that we need to worship. But I'm further amazed at those who go off to different places and you see pictures on Facebook or emails and stuff like that, that you see them in ways that you have never seen them before. You see them in dress or lack thereof in ways that you've never seen them before. And what is it about going away from home, going on vacation, that thinks we're on vacation from Christianity? I'm not understanding that. Romans chapter 12. Verse 1 and 2, are you with me? I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, wholly acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. It says that we have stepped out of the world. And we are being transformed from it. We are the people of God in every way, to our very core. The part that I agree with what some people say, it's what's in the heart that matters. Agreed. And our heart is so changed when we become a child of God that we do not act like, we do not look like the world. We don't even go to some places the world goes to because of what they are doing. At home or away, we are a people not conformed to this world. Will people know us by our dress? Can they see and identify us as something different? And the question has to be asked, why would we put ourselves in a position of having immodesty all around us, opening opportunity for sin? The point again, there's just some places that we don't need to go to, some places where we just don't belong. Paul said to Timothy, 2 Timothy 2, verse 22, flee also youthful lust, but pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace with those who call on the Lord out of a pure heart. Isn't it amazing how many times heart is mentioned and having a pure heart and a heart that is fixed on God and things like this? You see, this is what will make the difference for us. When we are focused and centered on things that are above, on things that are spiritual, on things that are good and pure, it will affect the way we dress. Philippians chapter 4, verse 8. Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, and whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there is any virtue, if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. The things which you have learned and received and heard and saw in me, these do. And the God of peace will be with you. If we want to be the people of God, and if we want to walk with Him and truly want Him to walk with us, then we have to act like it. It has to be in our heart. It becomes who we are. And we think about it, and we have to focus on things that are virtuous, things that are good, things that are pure. And that's going to separate us from so many. Even to the point that there are some places that we don't want to go. Wait a minute. There'll be someone who says, you know, I'm just not tempted by looking at some of those things. Really? Really? I wonder if that's what King David thought. I wonder if he thought, here this man of God, whom God had blessed in so many ways, a man of great power and stature, godly man, who looked at Bathsheba. Well, you know the story. I read an article a while back, a brochure advertising a youth camp. And it was a private enterprise, but it was run by some brethren. And in the camp information sheet there had some guidelines for the camp, and including dress. And in the dress part it said, there will be no mini skirts, short shorts, backless dresses or blouses, sundresses or tank tops. Boys are expected to wear shirts at all times. All pants and skirts, dresses, shorts, etc., must reach below the knee. Why is it necessary to give instructions to those primarily who are Christians that here's how you need to dress? We think there's not a modesty issue among Christians. Please, let's understand. The fashion trends and the way of the world is before us and around us all the time, and we cannot not be affected by that. But we can have a lot to say about how it controls us or not. There are biblical guidelines to modesty. Modesty and godliness define a principle that is so very opposite of that of the dress of the harlot, as we have read about. Clothing is a characteristic of the harlot, like we talk, like a prostitute. Clothing is as well a characteristic of a godly woman. The description given to us in a couple of passages here as we close that just stands out in a way that we can't miss the point. I mean, we've seen and we understand the dress of a harlot and what that does and how men look at that. Good clothing is a characteristic of a godly woman as well. A couple of passages. 1 Timothy chapter 2 at verse 9. Actually, verse 8 we might begin. The characteristic of a godly man. Therefore, I desire that men pray everywhere, lifting up holy hands without wrath and doubting. In like manner also, that women adorn themselves in modest apparel with propriety and moderation, not with braided hair or gold or pearls or costly things, but that which is proper for women professing godliness with good works. Not a lot of explanation is needed there. Modest dress, that which is honorable, would be defined. Propriety, that there's a sense of shame, that we understand what is appropriate and what is not. And moderation says good judgment, that we must have good judgment. It all says something about what is inside us, that which we can express in an outward way. It is what is in us that will determine what is seen on the outside. It makes a difference. We can overdress too. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 4 beginning says, do not let your beauty be that outward adorning of arranging the hair, of wearing gold or putting on fine apparel, but let it be the hidden person of the heart, with the incorruptible ornament of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of God. Chaste conduct, pure, being free from defilement. These are the better attractions, those of a godly woman, as mentioned in these verses. Understand, it is in the heart. God is interested in the heart. This is what is precious in His sight, and it should be beautiful to us too. And if our heart is right, it will have everything in the world to do with how we dress and how we present ourselves in front of others. Brethren, these are things we need to think about. These are things we can't ignore. How we dress makes a difference in how we are viewed by others. Even how we are viewed by God. Let's get our heart right. Let's make sure that our heart is pure. Let's have a heart, a mind that is chaste. and godly and thinking about spiritual things. And it will affect the way we dress. I appreciate your good attention. We want to offer an invitation today to any who need to submit and render their lives to Christ. Those who have not become a baptized believer, given the opportunity once again to become a child of God today and begin a walk with Him as a son of God. The opportunity is being offered as well to those who are Christians, but those who have fallen back, those who have let sin come into their life, those who have stepped away from God, it's time to come back. And the Lord is still calling those who would come, those who would come and make their lives right. And if you need to do that, we're asking you to come forward today and let your request be known. Can we help you? Would you come as we stand and sing?